Welcome to Season 2 of the Dopa Podcast, fueling conversations around creative wellness and turning negative barriers into positive tools for mental success. Brought to you by the Department of Proactiveness and your host, Alex Normanton. Joining me today is Katrina Encantor, one of the executive creative directors at 180 Amsterdam. We discuss how to shift from secrecy to openness and how to help people share more, be truly authentic and more vulnerable with their ideas. So Katrina, we're here in your apartment this afternoon on what could possibly be described as the windiest day in the last 3 years. Like, so many alarms going off on the weather apps today. It's insane. So thank you for making the abrupt and planned decision to move this recording from the office to your beautiful apartment. I want to thank you for being willing to being involved, and I'm excited to see what you've got to say today.
Of course. Thank you for making it over. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I listen to it several times now, usually in full transparency when I'm doing the dishes. That's sort of the gap where I don't have any meetings and I don't need to look after my three-year-old son.
Yeah.
So it's a chance for me to maybe just listen to other voices in the room.
Oh, no, that's nice. I think for people who don't know who you are, maybe you could say a little bit about who you are and what your role is.
I'm Katrina. I'm one of the ECDs at 180 Amsterdam. I joined recently in August after being in London, in Thailand, Italy, and the Philippines. So yeah, real pleasure to be here.
Your creative partner is actually your husband.
Yes, he is. We've been a creative team since 2010. Uh-huh. And we have been a team in real life since 2016.
That must make it a really interesting day, actually, working creatively together, but working as partners in life as well.
It has its perks and challenges.
Very diplomatic, though. Is he going to be listening?
I think I've heard him going quiet. So.
We're here today to talk about how to navigate from secrecy to openness, plus some practical tools on how to enable people to be more vulnerable and really share their ideas with their peers, their teammates, and ultimately their comrades. The industry at large is really massively changed, certainly since I started my career, and no doubt since you started yours. It was often common to hide away TV scripts in the drawer, creative teams scribbling away behind locked closed doors and trying to crack the problem. I'm just curious to know, where do you think this sort of attribute of being so secretive originates from in terms of idea generation and creativity?
What drives secrecy in terms of protecting our ideas is the fact that there's a lot of competition in the creative department. There's a lot of pressure about cracking the brief. A rejection of your ideas is a rejection of yourself. And I think especially when you're younger, you know, you put so much of yourself in the work that you don't want to risk feeling vulnerable or exposed. There's a lot of research that says that your mind is more susceptible to negative bias. And so I think you hear more of the harsh feedback a bit louder than, let's say, the positive things that people say about your work. So I think there's a bit of that. And I also think it's a lot about competition, because so much of what you bring to the table as a creative is directly linked to the originality of your ideas, you know, the uniqueness in terms of the insight. Then I think you do want to make sure that you come off as a hero. You know, I think most young people want to be the person that cracks the brief because of that.
This notion of competition is deemed to be not helpful to creativity. And a lot of people actually saying, don't view it as competition, view it as collaboration. Within the advertising world, it is very competitive, especially if you're working in teams. You want to crack that brief better than the other team who's maybe working on it in a pitch situation, or just that three teams are being given the same brief. Let's see who comes up with the best idea. So innately within that, there is this idea of competition and being secretive around your ideas. Has that changed more recently, or is it kind of still happening?
As a young creative, I suppose it is more common for you to be quite protective of your ideas. I think you realize that being open is an integral part of the process, because otherwise, like, you're creating ideas in a vacuum and you're not really opening that up to an opportunity to get better with different influences and different points of view. as you do progress in your career and as you become, let's say, creative leaders, creative directors, I think you do become more open to collaboration and you realize what people can bring to the table. Mm. Once I started taking on the creative director role, I understood that it was necessary for me to be able to deliver feedback in a way that my creatives will feel motivated and that I welcome other points of view on my work. Mm-hmm. Like when you do open yourself up to feedback, you've got to choose like who gives it. You don't need to take feedback from people on cheap seats. If you're just taking feedback from, let's say, someone who's posted a comment on something you made, then it doesn't feel as if it's feedback that you should listen to. But if it is from someone that you trust, someone that you work with, and it's clear that you're working on similar terms and a similar objective, then you realize that that is a safe space for feedback and you understand why those points were being raised.
I think also it's almost up to the individual who's receiving the feedback to filter through what they feel is valid and what they feel should be taken on board to progress the idea. Whilst you're young in your career, there's so much opinions coming from every angle. It's often hard to separate out what are really valid points. You can feel overwhelmed by the amount of feedback, but not really sift through what should be taken on board or what should be discarded or what should be developed and moved forwards with. If you're working as a creative leader with a younger team, then almost the creative leader's kind of filtering those remarks in order to then direct the team for what should be focused on next.
Yes. So I think previously feedback wasn't delivered that well, or people weren't as aware that you needed to be looking out for people's emotions as you were talking about their work. But I think these days there's just much more focus on mental health, and it's just necessary that creative leaders are aware of the way that they deliver feedback.
Yeah, and not just creative leaders, actually, other people who are in the project team, be it account directors or
of course
heads of strategy. Everyone fundamentally, as you say, are putting themselves into the work, so they need to feel empowered to then develop on from the nucleus of an idea. Creative people are so sensitive about their own work and their own ideas because they're putting themselves into it. So I understand in a way where this secrecy element comes from.
Working as a team is built with trust. That is done over time. And so I think it's really important that you understand that everyone's working towards the same goal. If trust has been built within that team, then you understand that this is not about you as an individual. It's really about, all right, how do we get this idea through? How do we make it as good as it can be? And how do we land it? How do we make it better?
It is a lot more collaborative and a lot more team-based and less siloed with maybe individual teams. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think it's still important that people feel a bit of autonomy about their work. Because I guess if you've just got a ton of people working on something, then you're not quite sure what the roles are. And so I think that autonomy drives a sense of purpose for us to make the work better, to just feel that we are able to control the outcome somehow. So I think that's still really important. But what I have to say about openness is that you need to know your boundaries as well. And so openness is not about, you know, divulging every secret that you have or all of the IP of the company. That's not really what it's about. But it's also the fact that you're opening up the work to other influences and just seeing how far they could take it. And so again, it goes back to, all right, what is it that we're working towards? You know, there is that shared understanding that it is all for the service and the work.
That's a nice analogy, actually, the boundaries around the secrecy. But they're safe spaces.
Yes.
Which is about people feeling that sense of trust, camaraderie, collaboration, rather than competition. Why do you think that creative people struggle to open up and share their work?
I think so much of our work is so personal. And so I think the best creativity is always fueled by human truths. That requires you to open up the things that you feel shameful about or the things that you feel motivated by. And sometimes that's something that isn't for public consumption because that's so linked to who you are. I guess you can be quite protective of, all right, maybe I won't get accepted or maybe my ideas won't get liked. That's partly the reason why creatives feel protective about their work. But also, I think there's a sense that you want to see the idea through. And so I know that for some creatives, it is a process where, you know, you come up with an idea and then it's not quite fully formed and you want to go back to it and you want to step away from it and then maybe improve it a little bit more. And so it is a journey. And sometimes I understand that you need some time for that to simmer and you need to let that go off on its own and give them space rather than sort of checking in all the time. And I think that's probably one thing that isn't so conducive with the work environment now. Like, for instance, everything is on slides. I know that some creatives find it difficult, you know, like when they see a little icon peering over what they've written. I guess it's the same sort of feeling that we had previously when we were creators, where you're working on something as an art director and your your CD's right behind you. It's a bit constricting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think we need to allow creatives a bit of space to figure things out on their own. And I think the way that I like to work with my teams is that, all right, we have a space where we are able to talk and we will focus on what you've done rather than you as an individual or anything like that. We're going to put the problem in front of us and talk about what needs to be solved. We'll talk about what you've done well. Those are the things that builds trust over time. If they know that they can come to me for a bit of honest feedback about their work, then I think we're able to build that trust that we talked about is so important in teamwork.
It's very often taken very personally about the critique of work because you've created it. But actually, it's just about the work. It's not about you. And it's increasingly hard to kind of separate those things, isn't it? But I think if you're genuinely loving the person and it is about the work, then you're more likely to open up and share more about what you didn't maybe bring to a creative review or what you didn't show on screen that's tucked away up on the art board somewhere.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of the research that Daniel Pink did with motivation. Like, the three factors that really drive it are mastery, autonomy, and purpose. And I think if you understand that welcoming feedback in is a way for you to learn, then that keeps you motivated about coming into work and putting more of yourself into the job. I think we spoke about importance of autonomy as well earlier. And so openness also means that you are welcoming other people to sort of rise in their own roles, giving them the tools to take things on, understanding what it is about their work that needs to be improved and could be strengthened. What are their strengths that could be put in the forefront? That gives them the tools to keep things in control and feel like they have a say in the direction of the work. And lastly, I think openness also helps with giving them a sense of purpose, because if they feel that they are part of a bigger team, they're not alone, they're not isolated in this venture, then I think it gives them reason to work with the teams and to further what we've got on the table.
Absolutely. And it's about building on something with a wider team of comrades, fundamentally, building on ideas and pushing them further. I think when it comes back down to an individual perspective or even a team, I'm kind of thinking of an analogy here, which is inferenced in the episode I did with Eric Kessels, where I was saying sometimes creators aren't ready to share stuff. You know, they're out in the back garden, the secret garden, playing with things and ideas, and they're nearly ready. But you'll know when they're ready when they walk through the house and bring it to the front garden and put it on display.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful way of describing it. It's being creative in secrecy and putting yourself into your work and pushing it and allowing certain people to peek over. But actually, when it comes through to the front, then it is on display. But it's on display to be sharpened and to be pruned and to be beautified in order to make it better. And I think that's a nice analogy. And it is effectively then down to the shared ownership of work, ideas, and the team spirit that makes things much better than they started off being, really. It's kind of from a little seed to a beautiful flower, isn't it?
Yes, totally. I think what I like about that analogy as well is that the roles are really clear. So the space is really important for us to think about the ideas that we're proposing. I think if you aren't able to expose it and allow people to add value to it, then it just becomes something that isn't shared with the world. So yeah, I fully agree with that.
Interestingly enough, talking about the world, Nice segue.
Yeah.
I mean, you've worked in several creative companies around the world in different locations, from the Philippines to London to Italy and now in Amsterdam. Would you say this notion of being so secretive around creative ideas is prevalent more or less in some of those locations? Are there similarities? Are there differences? I know that's a big question.
I would say that there are a lot of similarities in the sense that every creative will always feel protective about the ideas they're creating. I think the more invested you are, at least, in the idea, the more protective you will be about it. So I do feel that I see those similarities. Like, it manifests itself in different ways. So for instance, in Thailand, where they don't like a lot of confrontation, I think a lot of these discussions will be reserved to the end, if at all. That's part of the way that they operate and sort of protect themselves. And so that's something that I think I needed to learn, like moving around these different cultures. So for instance, in the Philippines, I think openness is manifested in different ways. There is a lot of camaraderie within the creatives, but I think in terms of sharing ideas, like for instance, my husband and I were both creatives in the same shop, and we were talking about how we never shared our ideas with each other, even if we were hanging out all the time. Because I guess there is still that competition when you're young about wanting to be the one to crack the brief. And then I think working in London, because you're always working in teams often, there is like that secret bond between the team, and there's a lot of openness between, let's say, the copywriter and the art director. But in terms of teams sharing their work, I think there's still a bit of hesitation around that. And so I know that, for instance, some offices have tried things like hot houses where all of the creatives are in one room and we brainstorm together. I think what happens in those kinds of instances is that it's less about autonomy and it's more about contributing to a greater cause. But I think as you grow up, you know, you do lose that sense of preciousness about the work. And I think you understand that collaborating is just much more enriching in terms of the creative output.
Comparatively, what would you describe the situation like in the Netherlands?
Yeah, so I think having arrived at 180, what I would say is that it might be a case of being in the Netherlands, where the Dutch are typically known to be more direct, or it might also be the fact that we've got a lot of people coming from different parts of the world that you feel that discussions are a lot more fluid, a lot more open. For instance, that there is a lot of transparency in conversations and there's a shared understanding that any feedback is really about the work and nothing else. And I suppose because we've got such a clear vision of working and creating the world as it could be. And so I think all the creatives are really motivated with coming into work and trying to understand that we're here to help each other out.
I liked what you're saying about your experiences in Thailand, where the critique and the honest feedback is almost reserved till the end.
I think in Thailand, there is a sense that saying no is a sign of disrespect, especially if you're talking to, let's say, someone who's more senior than you. And so I think people are quite cautious about, let's say, having an open discussion with their bosses. What was quite nice, I guess, with the setup that we had in Thailand was we were working in a regional role. And so there were a lot of people coming from all parts of the world that I guess made people understand, at least the people working on that piece of business, opportunities to be open is really about the work. I guess I was quite aware that I needed to speak in a certain way. And I think that's also helped me in the way that I give feedback to people. Before going into a meeting, I'm always thinking, all right, what are the positive things that I can say about what they've done? You've hired these people for a reason. They're very talented and they, you know, they've got something to share. It takes a lot of bravery to be able to put your soul out there. And so I think if you can't really say one positive thing, then maybe you just need to maybe take a moment. Like anyone can say one thing that they're grateful for in terms of the work. So you can start with that, but you can also be brutally honest. Let's say, all right, the way that you've laid this out was really great, but this part needs serious work. And I think one thing that I've tried to do when I need to give feedback is just prepare myself. All right, how can I focus on what they've done?
I also think that there's a link between how feedback is given and then how people want to share or keep things to themselves. So if there's a super critical, analytical leader who's literally critiquing everything and nothing's ever praised or nothing's ever good enough, then it's likely that that creative person is not going to share as much.
It's not always easy to deliver feedback on work. You know, I always feel like I need to prepare myself, especially if I'm about to say something that they might not like. But I guess what drives me to work on the way that I deliver feedback is I'm always thinking about my own personal values. I've identified that as, all right, I'm going to be curious about the job. I want a sense of accountability. And I want to be sure that I bring a sense of optimism. That applies to being open with your teams as well. If I'm going to be living the value of curiosity, then I want to make sure that they are also curious about the work and that they are learning. And they won't be able to do that if I'm not frank with them. The reason why I'm here is so that they get better. So I guess my role here is, you know, I give them the tools so that they can develop the instincts to make their own decisions when I'm not there. That's what drives me to think really hard about the points that I want to raise with them and to make sure that they understand. And lastly, I suppose the sense of optimism also drives me to understand, like, this is someone who wants to share something. They've got their own reasons for being in the creative department, but as a leader, I think I've got to unlock that somehow. That's also the shift throughout my journey. I think when you're younger, you know, you're more focused on cracking the idea. That's the product that you've got in mind. And I think when you become a creative leader, then I think you're much more focused about building the culture that creates those kinds of ideas. And so I think when you understand that, then you realize how trust is so important and how openness and a bit of vulnerability fuels that trust. So that's the reason why, even if like I'm not divulging everything about myself, I do want to apply a sense of openness when I'm talking about the work or when I'm welcoming ideas from different parts of the agency as well.
So as opposed to cracking the egg, you're nurturing the egg.
Exactly. Well, I'm nurturing the people who are cracking the eggs.
There we go. I knew you'd provide the connective glue. Yeah, but it's true though, isn't it? Because it is a precious thing.
Yeah.
What attributes do you think define a modern creative working today and why?
I would say that a modern creative will have a growth mindset and will look for opportunities to open up your influences. I think the only way to become better as a creative is to make it into a practice where you're giving yourself a bit of an inspiration diet, so to speak. Like you've got to make it into a habit and you've got to make a vote every day to just see something different, even if it's just changing your route to work. I think you've got to find ways of stimulating yourself. And I realize that's particularly hard, especially in the time that we live in. But I also think that we've got the tools to connect to each other. So for instance, one thing that I did to keep me sane during the last couple of months was whenever I would speak in a panel or I would judge in an award show and there was someone that I really connected with, I'd ask them, you know, would you want to have a virtual coffee and we just talk for 30 minutes? And I think that's really helped me make we connections that I think just enrich the way that I think and give me a sense of perspective into people's lives. I think that's so important for creatives these days. You've got to go out there and look at different influences. So books are still available and
the end of print hasn't happened.
Well, I still buy books. I mean, if you can see my bookshelf and also upstairs.
Yeah. I think there is a resurgence and a return to print.
Yeah.
Very much in the way that was a resurgence to vinyl. I read an article at DNAD Pi recently where people have spent so long on screens over the last 2 years, looking at various blogs, inspirational sites, news articles, Pinterest, if you still look at that, and how people are just fed up of it. There's nothing more powerful now than sitting down with a book, a past DNAD annual, a Graphis annual, communication arts, all the sort of beautiful pieces of work that takes a lot of creativity to actually represent in a book. People are returning to those for ideas. And there's something about tactility and looking through an annual to be inspired about. And I think that's right. I think, you know, there's too much stuff online in a way. It's bombards you and it takes you down a sort of completely different headspace. And before you know where you are, you've lost the morning. Whereas books feels a little bit more focused and you can pick it up and put it down and then you can get re-inspired and get on with your day.
Yeah. And I think being in front of a screen puts you into work mode. I mean, it's just too accessible for you to look at your emails and also for people to contact you. Whereas I think if you're reading a book or you're going out for a walk, you're having a conversation with, I don't know, the barista at the cafe, even if it's just about, all right, what kind of milk he uses.
Yeah.
I just think that sparks certain sensors in your brain.
Yeah.
And it connects you to a bit of humanity, which yeah. I think is still so important, you know?
Yeah. I'm also remembering my college tutor who said you should be a sponge to consume useful and useless information, because actually you never know when you will draw on it and it's there. It'll come up at the most unexpected time. And I think that's right. You know, do things that you don't usually do. Read things you don't really want to read. You know, when I was at college, it was like reading Trainspotting in Glaswegian dialect. Took you into a whole world, and it took you about three chapters to actually settle into it. But then it opened up your mind to do, you know, crazy things. I think there is this symbiosis relationship between online and offline.
Yeah. I think the one thing that our current environment has done is it's opened up our houses to other people. And so you do get a sense of exposing yourself. Like, I think it's now understandable for, let's say, people's babies to come on screen, their pets to join in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think what that has done is also given us opportunities to just see the humans behind the people that we talk to every day.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's an opportunity for myself to be a little bit more seen by people. And you keep some boundaries between your personal life and your work life for good reasons. But I think, you know, allowing yourself to be seen a bit more is also a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. What do you think some of the benefits are of bringing ideas and ultimately yourself out into the open?
I think bringing a bit of vulnerability into the work allows it to be richer and more relevant to people. With our work, we're always trying to create a story. And I suppose the best stories are always about archetypes and not stereotypes. So I think it's about finding the thing, the human truth that everyone can relate to, but it's told in such a different way. And the characters are interesting. And if so much of our work relies on human insight, that means that we have to dig deep into the things that aren't always exposed about ourselves. You know, the thing that is a little bit embarrassing or the thing that sort of makes us feel shameful or makes us feel demotivated. If those things are relevant to what we're doing, then I think those kinds of things are the things that people relate to. And so especially with the kind of work that we do, where we're developing sort of ideas that roll out into the world, I'm in a global role, you know, I'm trying to look for ideas that will resonate with different markets. I think my challenge with that is always trying to find, all right, what is a thing that is quite common amongst all these different people that sort of brings us together?
Mm.
And I think that's quite funny, you know, like the thing that you are most secretive about is also the thing that will connect you to other people. There's something quite interesting in that. And I suppose most people forget that sometimes.
Yeah. This notion about designing and creating for humans, or, you know, it needs to feel more human, more relatable, more accessible, more authentic. I think it's true. I think there's something related to authenticity and openness and laying things bare, because everybody has a story to tell. How are you going to tell that story in a unique way? And what are people going to identify with it the most? Probably being more honest, transparent, and authentic, rather than putting up, you know, bravado and something that's hidden.
Yeah.
And those are the projects and those are the pieces of work that, as you say, people are really identifying with, connecting to.
Yeah, and I think it goes beyond advertising. Like if you look at Parasite and how that's been appreciated all around the world, I think maybe the thing that's made that so successful is the fact that the way that they've told it was just so unexpected. And I suppose maybe that's probably like a mindset that we can take with creativity, that we need to be open to influences and just understand that we're enriching ourselves by doing so.
So in terms of practical tools, have you got any top tips for how people can stop being so secretive, maybe learn to open up more and be more vulnerable with their ideas?
One thing creatives could do is to reevaluate preciousness. Most of the creative ideas don't really become their best selves if it's not passed through different hands and minds. And I suppose because of everything that's happening in innovation and tech, I think there's just so much more opportunity for different influences to enrich the work that we do.
Mm.
I think what I've noticed is, you know, the best ideas that have come to play in the last couple of years have been born out of collaboration. And sometimes it's not just about creatives with other creatives. Sometimes it's a company collaborating with a completely different company. The key to producing inspiring idea is a little bit of surprise and unexpectedness. And I suppose if you're always talking to the same people or you're always drawing inspiration from the same pond, you'll always get what you've always done.
Mm.
Maybe looking at things that you don't particularly agree with or you're not interested in, like just seeing, all right, maybe I can push myself to do 1% of that, like learn 1% of that thing and see, you know, just see it as an opportunity to enrich your library of sources. I think that's probably one thing that I would encourage creatives to do.
Well, there's more than one thing in that, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Several things.
What would you suggest from a mental perspective? I mean, we talked about that analogy of moving from the secret garden to the front garden. But what other things could you suggest to make that shift? Because I think it is a mental shift that needs to happen as well as a practical one.
Yeah, so one advice I would give to creative leaders, I suppose, especially when it comes to giving feedback, is to just to use verbs rather than, let's say, adjectives, like, because that allows you to be quite transparent with what you're seeing, and it allows you to focus on the work rather than anything else.
Mm.
I think that also leads to more clarity. And clarity is probably one of the kindest things that we could give to a creative. You know, being able to be clear on what they need to do next is something that they really need from their leaders, I think.
Mm.
If you're unclear and going roundabout with what you want to say, then first of all, it's inefficient of everyone's time. I also think that creatives have a more difficult time because they're not quite sure what to do.
Mm.
I think taking on, you know, the fact that even delivering feedback is something that you need to learn. Most creative leaders don't understand that this is something that needs focus as well, just as much as creativity itself.
Mm.
I would probably encourage more creative leaders to invest in making sure that they deliver feedback in the most open, transparent, like the kindest way possible.
We talked a lot about feedback and critique, which is kind of interlinked into being open and being secretive in some way.
Yes.
So it's very much about being positive about the work, being open and transparent about the work in order to fuel better ideas. If you're negatively critiquing things all the time and being super analytical, then obviously that's going to encourage a more secretive approach to ideas, thinking, and not sharing so much.
Yeah.
So I think in a way there's themes, adjectives, and different topics all in this kind of melting pot, because creativity isn't just point A to B. You can't just move from secrecy to openness and you've cracked it. There's a few different things along the way, and it ultimately is about people's development as creative people, as characters, as personalities. I liked what you said about archetypes. So it's not just we're creating for XYZ, we're creating for people. We're trying to talk and communicate to people. Life is actually just about being open and being real and being genuinely human.
No, that's true. I think we forget that we are part of a creative department. We're part of a team, and you want to get the most out of the experience. You can honestly do that by trying to bring in a lot more of yourself. And that means, you know, being more open, which leads to a more motivated team.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you, Katerina. I really want to thank you for your time, for opening up your home. Yeah, I really enjoyed chatting to you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I'm glad you enjoyed it as well. You're smiling.
Finally.
Because at the beginning, you were so nervous. Now you're fully smiling.
I'm still nervous. hopefully you make sense of it somehow.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you for making it over.
Thank you. We're wrapped.
Perfect. Great.
Feel free.
I'm afraid I don't know the words.
I reckon secretly you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Doper Podcast. If you found this episode helpful and inspiring, please don't forget to follow, like, share, review, rate, and even subscribe. If you have any content ideas for future episodes, or you simply want to get in touch, please email alex@thedoper.com.